Hey guys, welcome to the highly anticipated part two of the Mirrorless Mayhem episode. I released part one several weeks ago. It was episode 117. So if you happen not to have caught that yet, you may want to go back and start there just in case you want to dive in here, or maybe you heard that but need a refresher. Basically, I put together what I planned to be a two-part episode because I am in the process of switching from DSLR to mirrorless. And I decided that although I am not like a tech review podcaster, generally speaking, this is kind of a big thing that a lot of photographers are either in the process of doing or are thinking that they may be doing in the future. So I figured maybe it would be helpful to some of you for me to share my process and my story and my, you know, what I come across. That also coincided with the fact that I had planned a trip to Iceland in August, where I figured it would be kind of the perfect time to test out some mirrorless cameras and see which system I wanted to go with and what specific camera I wanted to go with. So I called up my friends at B&H, who anybody in the States knows is a major camera supplier, camera gear supplier. They are based in New York City, and they put me in touch with a guy named Gabriel Biederman, who is a sort of product expert there. And we recorded a conversation, this again was part one, episode 117, where I gave him all of the different things that I was looking for, the things that were important to me in a mirrorless camera or in a camera in general, really. And then he walked me through what his recommendations would be in terms of what cameras I should try. Then B&H sent me some cameras and I took those with me to Iceland. After I got off the phone with Gabriel, but before I went to Iceland, I also was put in touch with Stacy Moore, who works for Fujifilm. And shout out to my friend Deb Sladek, who was the person who introduced me to Stacy. I ended up just chatting with Stacy. When I had talked to Gabriel, I mentioned to him that full frame was really what I was looking for in terms of a camera body. So he didn't include Fuji at all in the discussion because Fuji doesn't actually make a mirrorless full frame camera. They have their APS-C, their crop sensor, and then they also have a medium format, but they don't have anything in between. So he had just left it out of the conversation altogether. But then, again, before my trip, I ended up talking to Stacy, and she was like, well, I know that you want full frame, which is totally fine, but I just think that while you're comparing these, maybe we can send you a couple of Fujis and play with those as well. So although that wasn't part of the episode because I wasn't anticipating that turn of events, like I didn't record our phone call, I wanted to sort of give you some of the backstory about that before we dove into the part two. And anyone who knows me knows that I am not really like a techie person. I have been known to discover a feature or a function on a piece of gear literally years after purchasing it. And you will never catch me pixel peeping or, you know, running these side-by-side comparisons for a particular piece of gear in a very scientific way. I find doing that tedious. And to be honest, I find listening to someone else talk about when they did that even more tedious. Now, don't get me wrong, I absolutely want and need a high-performing camera, and I know the difference. And I will tell you, it drives me absolutely bonkers talking to some people, and I will say that most of them happen to be male, who listen to me talking about my family photography business, and I can just see their eyes glazing over. I can see the judgment coming in where they're like, oh, that's cute. You don't know anything about it. Let me tell you about what I know. And I, for a very long time, have wanted to turn around and be like, let me tell you a thing or three. I can deliver photos that bring people, you know, to tears, and I can make a very respectable salary doing so. So please don't tell me my business. But I digress. I just happen to think that it's more important to focus on making images that your clients will love and running a business that allows for that to be a profitable process rather than obsessing about the tech that gets you there. But the tech is part of the job, right? And since I knew that I was ready to switch from DSLR to mirrorless, I figured that some of you might appreciate a gear review from someone who has maybe a less tech-focused perspective. I should say, if you are a gearhead, if you love thinking about the very fine details of this stuff, this may not be your favorite episode. You may want to skip this one because I can almost guarantee that I have probably used the wrong terms somewhere or something else. And the truth is that as enthusiastic as I was to take this project on, it really has been harder than I anticipated. If I were just buying a new camera for myself, I would probably, you know, read some reviews, look at prices, do a bit of talking to some friends, and then just make a choice. Because I know that no camera is perfect, and I also know that whatever camera I end up buying, at least when you sort of go past a certain level, it's going to get the job done just fine, right? I know that I can meet whatever tech that I get and make that work. But the whole time that I was testing these cameras, you know, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, I'm going to be recording this episode and I need to have something to say other than just like, yep, I liked this one the most. Spoiler alert, the decision that I ultimately came to was not an easy one. And that is why it has taken me several weeks longer than I anticipated to actually pull the trigger and place my order with B&H. But place an order I have. This very morning, I ran my credit card for a big number and I'm very excited to see that package coming in. And so if you're interested in what is going to be arriving on my doorstep in a few days, well, let's dive in.
Welcome to This Can't Be That Hard. My name is Anami Tonkin and I help photographers run profitable, sustainable businesses that they love. Each week on the podcast, I cover simple, actionable strategies and systems that photographers at every level of experience can use to earn more money in a more sustainable way. Running a photography business doesn't have to be that hard. You can do it, and I can show you how.
The first thing that should be said is that the four cameras I took with me to Iceland don't really compare apples to apples. They range from an inexpensive crop sensor camera that you can get with a lens for right around $2,000 to a digital medium format system capable of billboard-sized prints, and that one rings in at more than double that. Those were the two Fuji cameras that I mentioned, the X-T4, which is a $1,700 APS-C sensor camera, and the GFX 50R, which is $4,500 for the body. The other two cameras are both full-frame cameras, and that is, of course, what I am transitioning from. I currently, just for those of you who may have missed the first episode, I shoot the Canon 5D Mark IV, and so the two that I tested were Canon's R6, and that's a $2,500 body, and then Sony's Alpha 9-2, which is a $4,500 body. And before we dive into the discussion of features, I wanted to take a minute to talk about price. Now, obviously, price is an important factor in any buying decision, but the truth is that I am happy to spend $5,000 for a camera, or probably even more, because it is truly one of the most important tools that I use to do my job. Yes, lots of cameras can deliver professional results, but I need a camera that's going to give me those results 100% of the time. I need to be able to trust that piece of gear implicitly, even when I'm working in the dark or in super contrasty light or trying to capture, you know, a fast-moving toddler. I also need a camera that will withstand what I will be the first to tell you is my not-so-gentle handling. I do a lot of, like, on-the-fly switching of lenses with, like, you know, my bag stuck in the corner of a sandbox. I am not particularly sweet and gentle with my gear. I will hand my camera over to a four-year-old to let them take a picture of their parents to kind of break the ice with them. These are all things that I have insurance for, but also, you know, I want, like, a real heavy-duty camera. I also need the camera that I am shooting with to allow me to crop a file and, you know, sometimes significantly and still be able to deliver something that my clients are able to print large enough to hang on a wall. So, you know, these are all factors. And then, of course, I also want that camera to be comfortable and responsive in my hands. So for all of those reasons, I'm happy to pay for quality. And I also really appreciate longevity. I would much rather spend more money up front to get the right gear that's going to continue to meet my needs over time, rather than saving a few dollars that I will then have to re-spend a whole lot sooner because I bought something that was already a little outdated or maybe mechanically inferior. That said, it's important before making big business investments that you are absolutely clear on why you need that specific thing, whether it's a course or a conference or a camera, and then how you're going to leverage that thing to earn that much money or hopefully a lot more. I see so many photographers getting, you know, bright, shiny object syndrome. And in our business, that can be really dangerous because those shiny objects are really expensive. But a camera is one of those things that I know for a fact I am going to have to buy every 5 years or so. And I know more clearly than just about anything else that I buy that it will pay for itself many times over in the course of its lifetime. So with that, let's talk about these cameras themselves. I'll start with the Fuji GFX 50R, which is the medium format camera that I really just borrowed from Fuji for fun. And Stacy knows that. She basically told me when we were chatting that if I'm going to Iceland, I should 100% borrow this camera to make landscape photos. And she was totally right. The pros of the GFX 50R are, number one, it has this giant medium format sensor, right? And honestly, for that giant sensor, it is incredibly priced. I am not sure that there is another digital medium format camera in existence that you can buy for less than $5,000. Now, it is small for medium format, which I take to be a really nice thing. I own a Hasselblad medium format film camera, which makes amazing photos, but it is a behemoth to carry around. This camera is much smaller. It's quiet. It has amazing dynamic range. When I was looking at these files in Lightroom, they were really beautiful files. And globally, I had a ton of fun playing with this camera. It really was. I was happy that I took it with me on the trip. On the downside, I imagine, you know, in order to produce a medium format digital camera for under $5,000, they had to cut costs somewhere. But it did feel kind of plasticky and light. So if you're going to spend $5,000 on a camera, you kind of want to feel like you're shooting a $5,000 camera. The viewfinder, when you look through the camera, had kind of a lower quality than I would expect from a medium format system. I felt like it was the resolution on what I was looking at through the viewfinder seemed kind of, I don't know, it looked kind of fake, but again, you could work around that. I also felt, and I'll talk a little bit more about this later, Fuji has a film simulation feature where you can dial in the imitation of several different kinds of films. So whether it's, you know, Portra or Velvia, you can decide in camera what you want these files to look like. And it will preview that in the viewfinder. And a lot of people really love that feature. But I've shot a fair amount of film, and I was having a hard time. It may just be that I wasn't used to it. I was having a hard time with some of the more dramatic film simulations like Velvia, which, you know, if I were shooting film in Iceland, I would absolutely grab Velvia for those like greens and dark tones. But, you know, and this isn't intended to be a technical review of this particular feature, but I sort of felt like it was almost distracting me when I was seeing that in the moment. I have gotten pretty used to seeing what I see in the camera, which is also true if I'm shooting a particular kind of film on a film camera. I still see it the way that my eyes see it, and then it develops differently later. So I was having a little bit of a hard time with the preview being sort of pre-edited for me. I will say that I did like the fact that the screen rotated so that you could shoot from the waist, which is something that with my other medium format film camera, I like doing so. So that was kind of nice. Ultimately, you know, as fun as this camera was to take on this trip, it's not the right tool for family photography and chasing around kids in low light situations, which is why I kind of started with this. I wanted to talk about it because it is a fun camera, but it's not something that I'm going to use for work. It's slow on the front end. You know, it takes a while to focus. That's just true for medium format. And it's slow on the back end. Those huge file sizes take a ton of time to transfer and manipulate. The only thing that this camera really does quickly is chew through storage space on your server. So do be thinking when you're shopping for a camera, sometimes those added megapixels, if you don't need them, are more of a liability than a benefit. So this camera is going to be a tool for someone who is photographing fine art portraits in the studio or, you know, landscapes for huge displays or print competitions. It could also be a tool for fashion photographers who are shooting professional models. And I won't lie, it was really novel and fun to play with the medium format system because previously, you know, if you wanted to get your hands on a digital medium format camera, you were dropping five figures easily, all the way up to, you know, in some cases, close to six figures. And so even renting one would be super expensive, and touching them made me nervous, you know, that I was going to trip over my shoelaces and have a giant insurance claim to file. What I love is that this camera has really broken down a barrier, and Fuji is sort of right there on the forefront. It's not the right camera for me, but it is making digital medium format accessible in a way that it never has been before, which is really very cool. So next, let's talk about the other Fuji that I tested, which was the X-T4. Fuji doesn't currently offer a full-frame mirrorless, like I mentioned, so the X-T4 and its APS-C crop sensor are kind of on the other end of the spectrum from the medium format GFX 50R. Some of the nice things about this camera are that it is extremely affordable. It's $1,700, so you could like buy an inexpensive lens and a camera and come in at the $2,000 mark. It is very small, it's unobtrusive, like you're dealing with like a very compact camera. It has a very solid build, like it feels solid, all metal design. And it kind of feels reminiscent of a film camera. You feel a little retro, old school with all the little manual dials on top.
Hang on, guys, I have a quick message for you.
Are you feeling stuck in your photography business? If you're bogged down or burned out or unsure what the next right step is, you're not alone. I've been there, and I know firsthand that quicksand feeling where the harder you struggle, the more stuck you feel, which is why I created the Photographer's Business Plan Glow Up. The Glow Up is a five-part workshop designed specifically for photographers like you. In the Glow Up, I lead you step-by-step through a process that will help you clarify your goals, identify the sticking points that are holding you back, get inspired by some of the systems and strategies that are working today in the photography industry, and then create a completely custom roadmap to take you from where you are now to where you want to be. It truly is a glow up for your business. Getting perspective can be nearly impossible when you've got your nose to the grindstone day in and day out. So this short workshop is an opportunity to reset, reevaluate, and rejuvenate your business, and it's all on demand. If that sounds like exactly what you need right now, click the link in the show notes or go to go.thiscan'tbethathard.com/glow to get started today.
But unlike old school film cameras, it has this really sweet, fully articulating LCD screen that you can turn around, you can close it, which I really appreciate because oftentimes, and I don't know if you guys photograph with the little kids will get all hung up on, let me see the picture. And I would fully anticipate flipping my LCD around when I am photographing with little kids like that, so that if they come over and say, let me see the picture, I can show them that they can't see it at all. But I get to preview all of them looking through the viewfinder, which is one of the things about mirrorless that I really like. This camera also has really solid video capabilities. The autofocus on the video felt a little slow, but for the type of video that I do, which is not very much, and it's pretty much like me looking at the camera, that would not begin to be problematic. It might only be problematic if you were delivering family films. The files that came out of this camera were absolutely great. There was no reason that they could not be delivered to clients. They could be cropped. I mean, they were perfectly large. which was kind of a surprise for me. I really had it in my head that APS-C was not going to work, but I think that it's absolutely a contender against a full-frame camera. And then there's this film simulation. And even though, as I said before, it didn't turn out to be my favorite thing, so many Fuji fans that listened to the first episode in this series texted me and DM'd me and said, I can't wait to hear what you have to say about this camera. I love the film simulation and it has revolutionized my workflow, because one of the things that they're really selling here is the ability to kind of think creatively in camera and then cut your editing time way down. On the downside, I found that this camera, as awesome as it is that it's so compact, I ended up feeling like the ergonomics were a little tough for me. I don't have big hands, but I still felt like it was kind of a small grip. They have dials on the top of the camera, and I ended up feeling like that made my adjustments slow, which was concerning because, you know, when you're photographing and you need to change things on the fly, I don't want to have to pull the camera away from my face and look and dial things around. They also had this weird feature where you adjust one knob to kind of dial in the general shutter speed, and then a secondary fine-tune knob where you kind of put your thumb and then you just like micro-adjust. And I get the idea. I used to play the violin, and you know, it's almost like when you're tuning and you tune first with the pegs and then with the fine-tuners, kind of like that. But it felt like... For such a small camera, there's only so much space for dials, and to use two dials on top of the camera for that seemed like a weird choice. It ended up feeling like extra work to change the shutter speed instead of just having a single dial that allowed you to change it in thirds, which is what I'm used to. The autofocus in the preview screen seemed kind of slow, and I'm not entirely sure whether that was just a matter of it lagging behind what was actually happening, but it made it so that I didn't feel like I could trust the autofocus quite as quickly. And then, not unlike the other Fuji camera, I felt like the preview screen resolution was on the low side. So when those images ended up on my computer, they looked fantastic. But when I was looking at them in the camera, it was almost distracting how low resolution the image was. And I imagine that that's probably something that will change with future iterations. So all told, this is really an amazing camera for the price. I felt like I could roll around on the ground, hike up a mountain. You know, I was not living in fear of scratching it or dropping it. And at that price point for a camera, it's really pretty impressive. Ultimately, I didn't feel like it was really a contender to replace my work camera. I had a hard time adapting to that button configuration, which I need to be 100% fast, intuitive, seamless. And I know so many people love this Fujifilm simulation in the camera, but I realized when I was sort of testing them that I ultimately prefer to have my viewfinder preview what's actually happening in front of me, what it looks like, and then make those creative choices in post-production. In the end, you know, I feel like this is an amazing camera for the price. And if I were interested in having an additional camera that was just for like personal travel and things like that, this would absolutely be a top contender. But as far as my work camera, this is not the one for me. So the third camera that I tested was the Canon R6. And as I mentioned, I am coming from the Canon ecosystem. So I am familiar with the way that Canon sets their cameras up, their menus, how they perform, how their buttons are. And if you are coming from a 5D Mark IV, the R6 is quite similar. Like, it's going to feel extremely comfortable and intuitive because they basically mimicked the body quite a lot. There were a couple of minor differences, but it was quite similar. So in some ways, Canon has kind of the home team advantage for me, because once you know a system and you kind of get it, it makes it easy to stay in that lane, right? I mean, in these systems, they rely on that. They know that it's hard and expensive to switch, but the fact of the matter is that it's not impossible. And I went into this test mode really very open-minded to switching, because as much as I feel like I like Canon, I had come previous like 5 years ago, I switched from Nikon to Canon. So I have switched systems before. And I think that for the right reason, there's absolutely, you know, it can be the right decision. So in terms of the camera itself, the R6 has a slightly smaller body than the 5D Mark IV, but it is still, you know, pretty sizable. It's comfortable. It does have, I do think Canons are comfortable in your hands. It's a comfortable grip. The files are large, but they're not huge, which is good for me. But it may not be good if you're looking for, you know, the 40 by 60 inch prints all the time. Compared to the 5D Mark IV, I will say that the R6 seemed like it had a pretty significantly improved dynamic range and the ISO capabilities. And the Mark IV does pretty well with ISO, but this is just a matter of, like, as time goes on, ISO continues to get better and better. All of the cameras that I tested had enough ISO capability for my needs. So I haven't, in this review, I haven't, like, made a lot of notes about ISO because I just tested it. And it was fine. And I do photograph some families in, like, the semi-darkness where they're like, are you sure we shouldn't turn on lights? Are you sure? And I'm like, yep, that's just the way that I roll. So when I say that, you know, I will frequently deliver things at 4,000, 5,000, even sometimes higher ISO. And all of these cameras gave me that ability. One of the weird quirky things that I really loved about the R6 is the fact that the LCD screen, like the Fuji X-T4, the LCD screen can be fully articulated. So it opens and it spins around. I think it's like a 270 degree spin. So you could set it up on a tripod and preview yourself, like a selfie kind of a thing if you were making video or even just making self-portraits. But I really do love the fact that you can flip that screen around and close it so that you can't see it at all. I do think that that is a nice feature with kids. The shutter was quiet. There is a reasonably high frame rate. I am not, you know, I'm not out there shooting like birds that are flying by. So I don't need to have 1,000 frames per second or anything like that. It's not important to me. But I could certainly get like a series really nicely with this one. And I will say, more than anything, the biggest change from the 5D Mark IV to the R6 is this autofocus system, which is insane. It's so good. And I found after I returned all these cameras that I was just missing the autofocus that I had in Iceland when I went back to shooting with the 5D Mark IV and was photographing with clients. It is, if you haven't made a switch to mirrorless, or if you are still working with a camera that's 3 or 4 or 5 years old, I will tell you that it is a true game changer to be able to just like choose a spot to focus on. And then like that kid could be running toward you full tilt and you're still going to get every single frame in focus. It's like magic. There was another cool feature with the Canon in particular, where I could have the camera up to my face, but simultaneously use my thumb on the LCD, sort of, you know, right in front of my cheek to change where the autofocus point was tracking. And that, I played with that a little bit. I think it would take some getting used to, but it was a very cool feature. And I think that one that I would be interested to play around more with. Speaking of that, the screen is a touch screen, which if you're using the Canon system, that's already a thing. But I do find that to be very handy. At first, and I'm getting ahead of myself here, but at first I thought the Sony didn't have touch screen, and I thought that was super weird. And for those of you who may not know or who may need to test these things out, Sony comes out of the box with the touchscreen capability turned off. So it's a setting where you can turn it on or off. I don't know why you wouldn't have it on, but for about half my trip, I didn't have touchscreen for the Sony. The last couple of pros for the R6, you know, obviously I already own Canon lenses, so I would have the option to just purchase an adapter. I wouldn't necessarily need to buy new lenses. That does increase the size of your lenses, and it makes it a little bit, you know, less, they talk about it being a little bit less accurate. I did test an adapter and I had no problems with focusing or anything like that. So, you know, it was fine. But the lenses did feel pretty bulky when they were attached with that adapter. And then the final one is just the price. I mean, I feel like at $2,500, this is an absolute steal of a camera. On the flip side, the lenses that Canon is putting out for, well, first of all, Canon does not have a huge array of RF lenses, which is the native mount for their mirrorless system. So, you know, you don't have all that many to choose from. And the one that they sent me, so they sent me the adapter so that I could bring my own 35, and then they sent me an 85. And the RF 85 millimeter lens was enormous, you guys. It was so big and so heavy. And I was like, I thought that mirrorless was supposed to be smaller. And this just between the camera body being about the same size and that lens being so big, it really felt like it was almost moving backwards. So obviously, like I was saying, if you have an adapter and an additional lens, you know, that even makes it bigger. And then the camera overall is about the same weight as a DSLR. So you're not really getting any size benefits from switching from DSLR to mirrorless. Overall, though, I really did enjoy this camera a lot. I love the articulating screen. When I was talking about switching from Nikon to Canon years ago, and I was going from a Nikon D700, which had at least a movable screen, which was kind of new tech at that time. And then I got the 5D Mark IV, which you can't move the screen at all. And I really missed it. When I first got the Nikon, I remember thinking, like, this seems a little gimmicky, but I use it all the time. I shoot a lot from directly overhead. I also get, you know, very low down on the ground to get these interesting perspectives on kids. And so I end up using those articulating screens a lot, and I have missed it. So when I was playing with the Canon again, I really did enjoy that a lot. I love how quiet the camera is. I love how well the high ISO performed, and, you know, mostly how great the autofocus is performing. I feel like that is truly a big step forward for me for the number of files that will be deliverable. But you guys, size does matter. One of the main draws to switching to mirrorless is that promise of a lighter load, and Canon does not seem to have worked very hard to make that happen. So between that and the fact that they are behind on the lens lineup, they definitely have a couple of things to work on. But I will get to all of that in a bit. In the meantime, let's talk about the Sony Alpha 9 II. So the Sony, in contrast to the Canon, was very small. It wasn't as small as the Fuji, but it was small. It was lightweight. The lenses that they sent me were also quite small, but it felt really well built. It did not feel like a toy camera. So the autofocus was insane. I feel like if I had to decide between Sony and Canon, I would say that the Sony edged out the Canon for the autofocus and eye tracking. But I did go against my own rule about doing side-by-side comparison. I actually had my lovely partner run around in circles so that I could photograph him and try and focus, use the tracking focus. And I have pretty hilarious series of photos of him. And, you know, almost every single frame is in perfect focus. So that was very impressive. The Sony has this insane frame rate. I think it's 30 frames per second on silent. And like I said, I don't really need that. It's impressive. The silent mode, though, is not like the quiet mode of the DSLR series. Silent mode means you literally cannot hear the image being taken. And it was pretty funny because when I was first playing with the camera and I had it on silent mode, I was like, I thought that I actually wasn't clicking the shutter. And then I had like 100 images that were just me sitting there pressing the button thinking that it wasn't doing anything, but it was actually firing the whole time. So silent mode is interesting, different, but kind of amazing. So the images were great. The file size was good. The camera felt good in my hands. And I did really like the fact that those lenses were quite a bit smaller than the Canon lenses. On the downside, I felt like at almost twice the price of the Canon, this did feel like a bit of an expensive camera body. Although, like I said at the beginning, if the rest of the stuff is in line, I can justify the price. This camera has some features that I don't need. I don't need silent mode, and I didn't like shooting in silent mode. And I don't need the super, super high frame rate. Like, that is not something, if I'm shooting 5 frames per second, that is plenty fast for my needs. And then this seems like a small thing, but the more that I used these two cameras side by side, meaning the Sony and the Canon, the more frustrated I got by the Sony's LCD. So the LCD on the Sony does articulate, but only up and down. So you can kind of pull it out from the back of the camera, and then you can tilt it up, I don't know, 40 degrees-ish, and then down a similar amount. Like, it's not a huge rotation. And it's on metal brackets. And to be honest, it felt kind of stiff and maybe a little bit, like, I could see how it could break pretty easily. Versus on the Canon, you know, that thing is on this very smoothly articulating, I don't even know what you call that, but like the system that allows it to flip around felt extremely solid. So it did, again, I understand that it seems like a small thing, but knowing that I will use that a lot, I was a little bit put off by the fact that Sony's was so inferior. Sony is definitely putting out an incredible camera with the Alpha 9 II, and people absolutely rave about how good basically all of Sony's cameras are. I love that if I switched to this system, I would be able to trim down the size and weight of my bag without sacrificing any quality. And Sony and Fuji were really innovating on mirrorless well ahead of Canon and Nikon, and that shows in a lot of ways, including in their lens lineups. So you can probably suss out at this point that at the end of my trip, I was like, okay, I was able to narrow it down to the Canon and the Sony. And it's not that I didn't enjoy actually both of the Fujis a lot. I just didn't feel like they were the right cameras for my primary work camera. So that said, I had these two cameras that were both great, could both do the job for my work. And I was just kind of going back and forth and back and forth about it. And it ultimately came down to just a couple of issues. The most important things to me when I was talking to Gabriel in the first episode were low light capabilities and their focus systems. And for both of these cameras, those are great, and they are miles ahead of what I'm currently getting from my 5D Mark IV. Like I said, did some testing with the focus tracking. That is going to be a 100% game changer. It is the number one thing that I'm most excited about switching for. So when it came down to it, I was kind of going back and forth between just the fact that Sony had its smaller size and the fact that it had a more robust lens lineup going for it. And then Canon had its price point and its articulating LCD going for it. Now, on the price front, I will say that when I started looking at the whole switch, although the Canon camera is cheaper, the lenses are, there are fewer to choose among, and they are way more expensive. So the Sony E-mount, which is the mirrorless mount, 85mm 1.4 is $1,700 and 1.8 pounds. And the Canon RF mount, which is their mirrorless mount, their 85mm 1.2, so the Sony is a 1.4, and that does make a difference, versus the Canon is a 1.2, that one costs $2,800 and weighs 2.6 pounds. So just to reiterate, you have the Sony $1,700, the Canon is $2,800, $1,100 more, and the Canon weighs almost a pound more than the Sony. So there's that. The 35mm, Sony makes a 35mm 1.4, it's 1.2 pounds, and it's $1,400. And then I looked at Canon's lens lineup, and they don't even make a professional 35mm lens. And I'm talking about 35 and 85 because that's what I shoot. I shoot almost exclusively with those two lenses. I own some other ones at this point, but that's just kind of what's in my bag all the time. And I was just shocked. Like, it almost completely stopped the conversation for me that Canon only has a 35 millimeter 1.8. It's a $500 lens. I mean, that's nice, right? It also only weighs 10.5 ounces, but I haven't tested that lens. I am reluctant to, I'm having a hard time believing that it is going to feel like a professional lens. I'm used to shooting L-series lenses, and that, you know, that is just, I'm a professional. I like professional lenses. So I don't doubt that Canon's going to put out an L-series 35 millimeter for its mirrorless system soon. But the fact that they're missing that, I feel like that's a pretty common favorite lens for people. And so it seems kind of weird. But just to sort of go back to it, I did look at the Canon 50 millimeter professional lens. I think it's a 1.2, and that is like a $2,400 lens. So their lenses are where they're making up for that monetary difference. It's like they're kind of selling you a cheaper camera body and then getting you with the lenses. So drum roll, please. I know you guys are all dying to know what I ended up buying. And I bought the Canon. So I really did struggle with this. And part of the reason that it took me, whatever this is, 6 weeks to record part two of this episode was that I was doing a lot of research on whether Sony was going to be putting out an update that was going to honestly have an LCD screen that I preferred sometime in the near future. Because for a lot of reasons, I really feel like Sony is ahead of the game on the mirrorless than, you know, ahead of Canon. But in the end, the fact that I am as comfortable as I am with Canon in terms of the way that it responds in my hands, I know it will be a faster, smoother transition for me. I also fully believe that as everything shifts to mirrorless, they will catch up with their lens series. I did order the 35 1.8, so I am going to try it out. See, I may return it and then just use an adapter and use my 35. But my thought is, as DSLRs are phased out of all of these systems, I mean, Canon has already announced that they are discontinuing the Mark series. I kind of want to offload these lenses, you know, sell them now rather than continue to use them. I'd rather just get the lenses that are made for the mirrorless system now. So yeah, so my credit card burned through some serious cash this morning, and I'm very excited to get my new toys and start playing with them. But I hope that this review was helpful for you guys. I hope you found it interesting in a way that sometimes gear reviews aren't. And if you have any questions or if you've got any feedback for me, please send it along. I would love to hear what you use, what you love, what you hate, and what you thought. And I hope you have a great week.
Well, that's it for this week's episode of This Can't Be That Hard. I'll be back same time, same place next week. In the meantime, you can find more information about this episode, along with all the relevant links, notes, and downloads at thiscan'tbethathard.com/learn. If you like the podcast, be sure to hit the subscribe button. Even better, share the love by leaving a review in iTunes. And as always, thanks so much for joining me. I hope you have a fantastic week.